3. What is the difference between everyday learning and school learning?
We constantly make sense of our world, of our experiences. We learn all the time. When we listen to the radio, or watch our mothers cook, or attend political rallies, or visit places. But we have heard that experience can both promote learning and stand in the way of learning. In this section, we will try and find out what kinds of learning best occur through everyday experiences, and what kinds of learning best occur in school-like conditions. Listen to these teachers discuss how their learning of ecology was enhanced by adding practical everyday experiences to their school learning.
Well, ecology to me, I took it theoretically, but when I came into this project, you think in a different way, whereby you see whether if you don't take care of the environment, obviously everything will come to an end.
Previously, before I became an ecologist, it just meant where I live and where animals are. But I never really put much thought into that. And the ecology to me was like the study of living things and non-living things. And what's their importance to me, I didn't really care much.
Environment and ecology never meant anything to me before I became an eco warrior, because it was just something that I was just teaching for the sake of, you know, earning a salary. When I became an eco warrior, I became aware, for instance, of trees, that they're very much significant for us and to know how much we need them. It is said that probably one tree can feed up to 20 people in terms of exchange of gases. So to me now, it's something that I live with, I have a passion for, that I now fight for.
While I was at school, like I was doing geography, like in the student 7, there was a chapter where there was ecology, so I started to know the meaning, the study of non-living and living organisms. But I didn't have interest in that subject. But now I realize that it's part of me. I'm part of the ecology. I have to know the environment, and it works together. Then my mind opened up.
In South Africa, many people learn the most important things they know outside school and without teachers. Some, like Murphy Morobe, a prominent UDF and ANC leader, learnt in prison. Listen to Murphy talk about his Robben Island experience. As you listen, make note of the way in which this informal education program was turned into school-like teaching.
I think for me, the island, or certainly for those of my colleagues at the time in the 70s, had always had the notion of Robben Island as a university. There were those of us who came from working class backgrounds. There were also those who were lecturers. There were others who were priests. There were others who were teachers. So in a sense, you had quite a fertile ground for cross-pollination across generation and also across experiences. So if you're locked up for 24 hours in an environment, there's nothing else that you do but to share those experiences. And for me, that became the first point of learning, because then you the important lessons are not so much those that would come from a teacher standing in front of a class or teaching you anything. It was the experience of being locked up in one cell with someone or other people with whom you didn't quite agree politically, or even with people of a different age profile to yours, and even with people of different experiences. That's where I think that the idea of discussions became a very important facet of the Robben Island way of doing things. The initial grounding that we had to go through was philosophy. We studied, we read the books on philosophy, whether it was from Karl Marx, whether it was from liberal philosophers, etc. We began to understand, because it is an important way of trying to understand yourself in the world. So that is the first exposure that we had to the discourse that was taking place on the island. What would then happen was that those who had recommended books, they would then apply to borrow these from the state library. By the time the book went back to the library, there would have been probably more than 5 copies of Das Kapital in the prison, because we'll sit up the whole night transcribing Das Kapital word for word, which we then would use later on for our own education. The approach then was to use those of us who were there as a basis for our learning. and where we used to have very significant debates taking place amongst us on some key, you know, issues of theory and of strategy. And one fellow, I think, who played a big role, certainly in my own thinking about life and things, is in the Northern Province. His name is Pukanuka, you know, and we used to refer to him as Comrade Pokes. And some of the work that he did was extremely important in that it actually took the history of our country, you know, and it was a teaching in dialectics, dialectical materialism, which is a way of thinking, way of understanding the world. And what he was able to do was to intertwine that with the teaching of our own history. In fact, it was simply titled The Country We Live In. And in that, you had lesson in history, you had lessons in philosophy, you had lessons in basically the modes of thinking, how you think about strategies and tactics. It was all encapsulated in that comprehensive lesson that was dished out to us, written on the back of either toilet paper or, in fact, a rice paper, you know, a newsprint. And it was had to be, you know, made in the smallest kind of foldings for it to be passed around easily. So that in each section that it arrived at, it would be copied and passed on to another one. So eventually we had the entire prison. We would have sessions where every section in the prison would be discussing the same area, so that when on those weekends where we meet, we'll have at least an hour, you know, of discussion around any of the issues that we picked up in our own section. And so there was quite extensive cross-referencing, and that assisted in developing a consistency in the way in which we understood ourselves, we understood the struggle, we understood the ANC, and we understood where we are and where we will want to go to. I think for me, the island experience taught me that there is nothing like absolute knowledge. Knowledge is about development. With each point you reach in knowledge, it leads you to greater possibilities of new things. It opens up new vistas. And you can never say you've reached a point of knowing it all. Even for those who know better than others, it's a question of how you train yourself to be modest enough to accept that even from that person who you think might know less than you, you will still have something to learn that can only enhance you in dealing with others who are to come. And I think that's an important thing, because if one gets the experience of where we came from with the Bantu education system, the system was not one that was predicated on continuous learning as a necessary ingredient to development. I'm sure there are more interesting ways in which learning can be structured in this environment. And I think the Robben Island experience suggests that you don't really need to have the most sophisticated equipment. It helps for sure, but really that is not the answer to the learning process. The learning process is voluntary. It starts with a realization of the need to learn, and also it actually must be underpinned by an acceptance of the need to share with others, you know, what you know, so that even you might even know better. For me, that's basically what I learned from the island.
Some everyday learning occurs without us thinking much. We simply model what other people do. But as we noticed, the Robben Island experience was different. Although this wasn't a school, the ways in which people learned had a lot in common with school learning. It isn't useful to say that one or the other learning is superior. Instead, this module suggests that both are important in that they teach us different things. The danger is that we pretend the two kinds of learning are the same, and then, as a consequence, argue that schools, books, and teachers are not that relevant. So what are the differences between everyday learning and school learning?
Is schooling a different kind of learning to other kinds of learning that people engage in? And certainly for the Vygotskians, the answer to that question is very definitively yes. Schooling is a particular kind of learning with very particular features that we need to understand. The kind of learning that takes place in school is what we might call formalized or systematized. One of the things you'll see emphasized throughout this model is an understanding that knowledge is part of networks of concepts, networks of ideas. We take the meanings that we have for concepts from the relationship to other concepts, for example. And what happens in a schooling situation is that becomes the primary way that we learn and understand. We learn by looking at the way that concepts exist within webs of concepts or within networks of concepts. Let's take, for example, mathematics. To understand a particular idea or a particular statement in mathematics, you need to understand how it relates to a whole lot of other statements and theorems and other kinds of ways of thinking about the world that are part of the much bigger discipline of mathematics. It's not just a question, for example, of counting whether you've got sufficient 50-cent pieces. It's a question of understanding how you develop and make mathematical knowledge in a much bigger system of concepts, which is the discipline of mathematics. I wouldn't want to say no. You shouldn't work with everyday experience. In fact, you should. But that gives you only a certain kind of knowing, if you like. It's a knowing which is very familiar, very taken for granted. We do not question it. In other words, it's a way of knowing that means we do not fundamentally question why and how and what it's all about. We simply learn it. What schooling does, on the other hand, is it's based on a system of knowing that is fundamentally about questioning. One questions everything, if you like. You question why, how, etc.
School learning, as it's used in this conversation, is about formalized ways of ordering knowledge in a way and putting things together and creating frameworks for understanding the world that are used to mediate people's everyday experience in order to see the world in new ways. And it's done in such a way that it's trying to prepare people to engage with the demands of the real world. And I think that's the central purpose of schooling. I incidentally don't think that it's only about a cognitive approach. I think the learning needs to operate at all levels. But I do know that the constructivist approach has been proposed here has a primarily cognitive emphasis. So, I mean, I acknowledge that there's a distinction between everyday learning, the learning that people bring and their everyday experiences, and the more formalized ways of understanding the world that need to meet one another. And that's what mediates the learning as I understand it, so that learners can understand their world in new ways. You know, calling that school learning seems to assume that that kind of framing only happens in the school context. My experience is that you can create the same kind of opportunities for mediated learning in other contexts beyond schools, but in the same way, though, where you work with everyday experiences and people move from that to new ways of understanding that through being exposed to new frames. But those frames are not only developed within a school context, and I don't think they are only dependent on the ability to read either in order to engage with those frameworks. And I say that as a person who's worked in various contexts outside of the school, where frameworks are used. They haven't been developed within a schooling context, they've been developed in other kinds of contexts, maybe religious context, or maybe through various other kinds of formulations of where people are trying to understand the world. But they are bodies of theory, they're ways of putting things together, and they are frameworks that do in fact impact on the everyday lives of people and take them beyond their understanding of their lives within that language and give a new language, and in that way do mediate a new way of seeing the world.
I think what happens in home environments and social environments of people who have been schooled is that school forms of knowledge operate increasingly. It's of course true that the parents or the caregivers of children who themselves have been schooled pass on those ways of knowing to their children. But if you ask the question from a psychological point of view, you're asking a question about what particular kind of learning brings that about. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're calling school learning. And anywhere in the world, the most systematic place where it happens in the most sustained way is in the formal institutions.